natural things on Earth and how they interact is biodiversity. From the microscopic to the mighty, from the smallest body of water to the coldest, from underground to the highest ground. When biodiversity is rich, we can count on the natural world to produce the oxygen we breathe, filter and purify the water we drink, and grow the plants we rely on for food and medicine. Due to human activities, biodiversity is being lost faster than nature can replenish it. So let's do what we can to help preserve biodiversity. Create natural spaces and plant native species. Take part in a wildlife survey. Get out and experience Canada's amazing variety of wildlife. And that's just a start. To learn more about biodiversity and how you can help protect it, visit hww.ca.
Listener-driven radio, 24/7, CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives.
Welcome to the Meta World Stupaloop Show. I am your host. I am A. Karen Elliott. This week on the Meta World Stupaloop Show, we bring you the second half of our look at the eruption of Mount St. Helens just south of the British Columbia border more than 40 years ago. One of the things that suggested this as a topic is the considerable amount of media that was generated on the event both at the time and since. It was an event that included both medium and short-term opportunities to plan coverage. It had become obvious an eruption would occur, to the extent that an earthquake swarm more than a month prior. Yes, swarm. No fun. This did, however, mean that outlets and journalists had plenty of time to make sure that their batteries were charged and ready, and it shows in the quality of coverage. Easily the best coverage of a natural disaster ever up to that period, and even for quite some years to come thereafter. The cross-section of outlets that have representation from all reasonable relevant parties is shocking, almost like proof of some sort of journalistic Oz. Granted, there only would have been a limited number of survivors out of a very limited number of people in the region to begin with, but we are pretty sure everyone managed to get interviewed by several television and radio outlets. It periodically shot out messianic bolts of lightning for more than a month and began to bulge at a rate of more than a couple of meters per day until there was a 400-foot zit on the mountainside. At about 500 feet and after thousands of small earthquakes, it popped. This created the largest subaerial landslide in recorded history, which moved at almost 300 kilometers an hour, filling the nearby Toodle River Valley with a debris pile almost 600 feet deep. Details abound in the show. This week, Mount St. Helens Part 2 on the Meta World Stupaloop Show. You are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. I am A. Karen Elliott.
She jumped up on top of Wilbur, the male, and over the fence and ran around and around circles around the outside of the fence, and he was squealing the whole time, too. And I had to chase him. Oh, I mean, it must have been an hour.
After having so much trouble with the hogs, we decided we had to take some drastic measures, and that took care of our problem right there, the butcher.
Getting at least as much media attention as the volcano was the 84-year-old man who defied the mountain and became a national hero. Even if Harry Truman had wanted to change his mind, it's difficult for a national hero to back down in front of millions of television viewers.
No way that you'd leave?
No, I won't leave. I won't leave. They'll have to take me out of here. They'll come get me. They better come get me. They'll get themselves a goddamn nest. Better be trouble if they come get Truman. And they try to force me anything, that governor better watch out, too. I'll go after her. Goddamn right I will. She's a Democrat.
Geochemist Dave Johnson was also staying put to observe. He had no illusions. But being a geologist, of course, he wasn't making any rash predictions.
Hours, it could be within days or even up to a couple of months. But right now, there's a very great hazard due to the fact that the glacier is breaking up on this side of the volcano, on the north side. And that could produce a very large avalanche hazard. This is not a good spot to be standing.
On the night of May 17th, Johnston warily moved further away. Then early the next day, without any warning, it happened.
Thank you.
this is a presentation.
All day and most of the next night, the volcano roared. No lava, just millions of tons of pumice,
boy, you have been
gas,
flying around the
and
area
ash.
Most of the day, and you've seen a lot of devastation. Have you had a chance to
by
see
Monday
how much,
morning, was 1,300 feet of its peak
well, of
was
course,
missing.
That area is off limits
in its
to,
place,
aircraft
a
like
vast
ours,
steaming
like
cauldron
us,
of a crater,
from
1 mile wide.
That have been in there,
most of what had come out had been heated
reports,
to near boiling
worth,
and tossed
the
down a valley.
Tell of large,
Harry Truman's lodge was somewhere under the mud.
Slope of the mountain.
Dave Johnston had reported the onset
there,
of the eruption by radio and then gone off the air for good. Another real measure of the magnitude of what had happened was that up to 20 miles away, full-grown Douglas fir trees had been stripped clean and combed down flat against the hills.
Ralph, maybe you have something later than this, but we have heard that a couple of days ago he mysteriously left the area and got out of there without telling any of us, but maybe you have more about that.
Well, we don't have too much more on that other than the story we have coming up a little later that he said he was going to perhaps hibernate in a cave for a couple of days, and we have not heard anything since. I hope your report is right. Boyd, since you've been on the ground, have you been inundated with any of the ash fall, and has it affected you? How does it feel that you have trouble breathing?
At our position here, Ralph, on
it was a natural disaster of epic proportions, much bigger than the Crandall and Molyneux maps predicted.
But we have flown up
the flows of mud in the river valleys had followed the historical pattern, but the blast damage nearer the mountain had been almost entirely directed to the north. An infrared aerial picture of the forest, taken on the 2nd of May, shows vegetation colored dark red. Here's the equivalent picture the day after the eruption. Every trace of life had been blasted off the map, way beyond what was considered to be the danger zone.
It's difficult to breathe. It makes you cough if you breathe it. It's abrasive on your lungs, and it ruins your eyes.
Boyd, good report. Thank you for being with us. We'll be back, possibly, to hear from Boyd a little bit later. Robin?
History in our nation has never been a more...
A report of a massive mudslide coming down the mountain.
Farmers, loggers, and campers in the river valley were moved to higher ground.
Dad, do you want to come to Bob?
I'd rather go to
Helen.
Boy.
Come on out, Santa, go there.
Don Swanson.
We quickly packed our bags and jumped on the first flight up to Portland.
Despite the eruption, logging companies in the area keep working. The Weyerhaeuser Corporation grows and harvests trees for building materials and paper on over 68,000 acres of land on Mount St. Helens. The day after the initial eruption, the company dispatches helicopter pilot Jess Hagerman to fly over the volcano.
Right on the very top, the whole top, there was a little bitty crater, and there were these big cracks running horizontal around the mountain.
USGS scientists install more monitoring equipment at their main observation post, known as Coldwater 1. The eruption has been a minor one, but they see it as a precursor of a larger and potentially deadly event. One of them, a 30-year-old volcanologist named David Johnston, voices his fears to a network news crew.
It's probably heating up very quickly, and it was probably pretty good evidence that eruption may be likely.
The U.S. Forest Service puts up roadblocks closing the top of the mountain. 40 residents who live nearest the summit are evacuated. Underground tremors make the eruption of Mount St. Helens seem imminent. The governor of Washington declares a state of emergency.
On the mountain, 60 feet, which is incredible. In July 2003, there is approximately 80 feet more snow than there was last year at that time.
Charlie was among the first to document the glacier's formation, and his research indicates that it's growing unusually fast.
I don't think anybody in the world has seen a glacier grow from almost the very first snowflake. This is the fastest new glacier growing in the continental United States. While most glaciers are starting to recede up mountains because of global warming, this one keeps advancing. One of the main reasons why this glacier is advancing and accumulating, it's on the north side of the mountain, which has little sunlight. So the shadow keeps the snow from melting.
A steady stream of dirt and rock also ends up scattered on the ice. This layer of debris forms an insulating blanket that keeps the ice from melting and allows the glacier to build larger and larger every day. Glaciers, of course, aren't uncommon in the Cascades. The rapid pace of this glacier's growth sets it apart from others in the Northwest. Just 50 miles away is Mount Rainier, a more typical Cascade peak, with several dozen named glaciers sprawling down the mountain's flanks. Rainier's glaciers are well known, expansive, and visible from just about anywhere. But Rainier is a relatively inactive volcano, and its glaciers are shrinking. In contrast, the unnamed glacier on St. Helens is growing fast. It's sitting on top of a restless and earthquake-prone volcanic crater.
More concerns arose when the north side began to bulge at a rate of 5 feet a day. Something dreadful was coming. On May 18, 1980, the event began with the largest landslide in recorded history as one side of the mountain gave way and unleashed a massive 9-hour eruption.
Formidable explosion. What happened apparently was a natural explosion equivalent maybe to 10 megatons of nuclear bombs or 10 million tons of TNT that swept across, first with a flash of light and heat, 800 to 1,000 degrees out 12, 15 miles away, that instantly burned everything that was in direct visual sight of the explosion itself. This was later followed in 2 or 3 minutes by the pressure wave that travels at the speed of sound, and then that was later followed by this enormous gush of liquid rock mixed with air and to some degree with ice that comprised 1 cubic mile of material. The absolute and total devastation of a region that encompasses about 150 miles. It's the worst thing I have ever seen. It had been described to me earlier, but it was much worse than the description of.
Yesterday, before the rains, the ash created billowing clouds of dust, and on I-90, it looked as though a snowstorm had hit. In fact, the swirling dust was so bad that when it settled, the ground resembled the lunar surface.
Obscured by clouds today is relatively quiet, producing a small earthquake and a tall plume of steam. In this desolate area, rescuers found a scene of death and new life.
A couple that were with him were killed by tree falling.
tree fell on the dog. The dog has been pinned there since Sunday. When they removed the people from underneath the tree, they went over to remove the dog, and the dog was still alive and had pups in the interim.
Stephen Geer, ABC News, Portland, Oregon.
This is Royal Kennedy. The Mount St. Helens eruption was as destructive to the economic livelihood of this area as it was to the landscape. The lumber industry and men like Frank Casolari, who work in it, will take the biggest losses. An independent logger, Casolari and his crew have already lost 4 days of work. Volcanic ash covers everything in their camp, and Casolari predicts that every time the weather is dry and the dust picks up, he will have to shut down his operation.
Truckers can't haul logs because of the dust, and loggers can't log because of it, and people are scared to go close to the mountain. There's a lot of problems.
It's estimated that enough lumber to build 200,000 homes was destroyed. Losses for the entire timber industry are estimated at $500 million.
As much as 100 feet the commercial per day. And it's by plotting these changes against time that we can determine when the next eruption will take place.
These techniques are used in combination with a study of earthquakes occurring beneath the volcano to predict eruptions. As magma makes room for itself during its upward journey, it fractures the overlying rocks, causing earthquakes. Seismologist Chris Jernians-Trisler at the University of Washington Geophysics Laboratory in Seattle, Washington, analyzes thousands of earthquakes that shake the volcano each year.
Well, what's so remarkable about earthquake activity at Mount St. Helens is that we see a very regular pattern prior to each dome-building eruption. The pattern is that we see a striking increase in the number of earthquakes leading up to the eruption. These records here are from the 1986 eruption and show this pattern very well. For example, roughly 2 weeks before the eruption, this day's records show maybe several earthquakes in a day's time. As we move closer to the eruption, earthquake activity increases so that we have many earthquakes per minute and we can barely count them.
Especially dangerous volcano, one that had been more active, more explosive,
than any other on the mainland U.S. The land to the south was the domain of another warrior. The two fell in love with the same beautiful maiden. She could not decide what she preferred. The braves battled for her love, hurling fire and hot rocks at each other across the Columbia. That angered the Great Spirit, who in a rage turned one brave into Washington's Mount Adams, the other into Oregon's Mount Hood, and the lovely maiden into Mount St. Helens. That is the stuff of legend.
Thousands of youngsters flocked to the lake over the years, learning how to row a boat even when the oarlocks wouldn't stay put. Sailing a wind that seemed to rise from the blue-green depths of the lake itself, always discovering new friends, the diamond-encrusted night skies, and how to cook an egg on a stick. There were national forest campgrounds on the lake, too. Bear Cove, Cedar Creek, Donnybrook. And beyond them stretched the forest. A living museum for the curious. A place as close to heaven as one could get. At Trail's End, there were places that were like living in a postcard world. In the winter of 1979, changes were taking place deep beneath the mountain's serene exterior. On March 20th, 1980, a moderate earthquake beneath the mountain registered 4.1 on the Richter scale and was the first sign of an eruptive phase.
And then shoot straight up toward the sky. A sustained lateral blast sends hot gas and rock from the volcano at hurricane speeds. It's devastation spreading nearly 16 miles from the volcano's crater. Nearer the mountain, massive deposits of rock and ice from the avalanche were followed by intensely hot flows of gas, rock, and mud.
And it went up, and it was like a big steam puff out of a locomotive. Just went straight up like that, black and ugly, and that really scared us.
And that was the very start of it. I saw the start, you know, and it just grew so incredibly fast. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I don't expect to again.
The Kearneys have just enough time to radio a warning call, pack up and drive out down windy logging roads. As they make their last dash to safety, they question if they'll make it out alive.
Like being in an eclipse along the edge of one and looking out and seeing the light beyond.
I was so dazed for a long time that I don't know if I was even scared, but I reached a point down the road where I saw all these multiple ash columns coming up in front of Goat Mountain. I could see no ceiling on it. I looked out the van windows. There was just a gray, huge mass, you know, and I thought, are we going to get out of this or are we going to die?
The question of survival is even more in doubt for freelance photographer David Crockett. His escape route is blocked by the mud flows.
From ABC News in New York, stay tuned for further details. We return you to our regularly scheduled program. Eruption looked like an atomic bomb. Repeating, Mount St. Helens has erupted. A special report came to you from ABC News in New York. Stay tuned for further details. We return you to our regularly scheduled program.
No, Mount St. Helens hasn't erupted again. But that's the way the world learned of the eruption of Mount St. Helens some 10 years ago today. You know, we in the Yakima Valley had an inkling of the importance and the magnitude of that great event, but it wasn't until some 3 days later that the world would learn of the awesome power of nature through these incredible photographs.
Geologists warned before May 18th that explosive activity was certain to occur. The timing and magnitude of the blast could not be predicted. But if a bulge is discovered to be growing on another volcano, geologists can use this experience to warn others of a similar eruption. Disastrous though it was, the May 18th experience is certain to save hundreds of lives on some distant volcano in the future.
Giant ash cloud followed, and cities to the east were eclipsed by it in the middle of the day.
after the ash settled, 57 people were dead. Hundreds of square miles of forests were destroyed. The valley was filled in up to 150 feet, mud, rocks, for 14 miles. The Columbia River was shut down to shipping traffic from ash and mud floods. The United States had never seen such destruction in its history. Eruptions have continued from 1980 to 1986 and 2004 through 2008 as the mountain attempts to rebuild itself, as nature always does. With an event like this, people had no idea how long it would take before this area would return to normal. Some scientists estimated hundreds of years.
Because rapid evacuation might be necessary, tourists and sightseers are urged to stay out of the area. But the warnings have the opposite effect, and tourists pour in from around the country. Souvenir vendors hawk t-shirts and bottles of genuine volcanic ash.
Completely blown off.
With 40 missing, far more needed evacuation. Rescuers quickly became heroes.
Dad, you want to go to a mom?
These were the folks that survived the blast, but they weren't out of danger. The mud was coming.
Would you get off the bridge? Get over here!
The snow and glaciers on top of the mountain melted, combined with the ash to form dreaded lahars, mud flows that would extend this disaster miles and miles away from the mountain itself. The world turned black and white, even on color film.
Some volcano enthusiasts try to get as close to the summit as possible. One of them is Robert Rogers, a 29-year-old radio technician with a passion for mountain climbing. He makes a game out of outwitting the sheriff's department.
I would drive up and go, oh, is it really dangerous up there?
Oh, yes, son, it's very dangerous.
Oh, do people try to sneak in?
Yes, we saw a guy up there two mornings ago in a blue sleeping bag.
Oh, really? Tell me, what did you do then? And they'd explain what they did to try to catch me. Because I was the guy in the blue sleeping bag.
For geologists, however, watching the mountain is no sport.
You just didn't have time to do anything but eat and sleep and work.
Clear weather brings out a record-breaking number of tourists and television crews. News choppers airlift reporters to the summit, ignoring the danger warnings. They are rewarded with 18 small bursts of steam and ash throughout the day.
The fishing industry will be hurt by the loss of millions of fish killed when volcanic ash and steaming mudslides heated the water to over 90 degrees. Silt and debris from the volcano virtually closed the port of Portland this week. The Columbia River channel, normally 40 feet deep, was half filled and unpassable in some sections. The Army Corps of Engineers has begun dredging operations, but it will be at least July before the port is ready for normal traffic. Royal Kennedy, ABC News, Portland.
Good evening. A new plume of ash rising 45,000 feet and pulsing at 10-minute intervals like a steam engine. That is the description of today's major eruption of the volcano Mount St. Helens. It was the biggest blast in a week of a series of volcanic activity which experts now say could continue for several years. The latest from Royal Kennedy.
Because of blowing ash from this morning's eruption, motorists were warned to stay off the roads. Some of those who didn't heed the warning were involved in this 14-car pileup on Interstate 5. 20 people were injured, two of them seriously. Earlier in the day, driving conditions were just as bad when the ash combined with rain in a smoky mud. Motorists were forced to stop periodically and hose down their cars. Many drivers turned on their car radios to get information about the current emergency and the long-term health effects of the ash.
Bob Jacobson of the Environmental Protection Agency says the EPA is worried about very small particles of ash.
Those particulates, if a person is subjected to heavy or prolonged exposure, can produce illness such as emphysema, acute bronchitis, or other respiratory diseases.
In Longview, Washington, the ash storm not only blocked out the daylight, but left the city totally without power. The ash is also threatening the city's water supply, and residents are being asked to use as little water as possible. Geologists say this morning's eruption is just a continuation of yesterday's activity on Mount St. Helens. They say it did not rearrange the surface of the land and was not as dangerous as last week's blast. But they point out that ash from volcanic eruptions is something the people of this area will have to live with for years to come.
Standing on the landing gear of the helicopter, ABC News cameraman Tony Gonzalez photographed the headwaters of the Toutle River this morning, and he reports that the layer of ash is much heavier since last weekend's eruption. Our chopper was climbing toward the peak of Mount St. Helens, and here, looking toward the rising sun, we see the rim of the crater. Directly over the crater, the plume of steam and ash. Only a light dusting of ash fell on our helicopter inside the crater. Two earthquakes rattled the mountain this morning following yesterday's tremors, which indicated the movement of molten rock within the mountain. Search teams were out in force today after being called off because of the tremors. Unknown is the significance of this morning's quakes, 4 and 3/8 on the Richter scale, which were centered under Mount Margaret, 10 miles north. Mount St. Helens is relatively quiet for the moment. Stephen Geer, ABC News, Portland, Oregon.
ABC News correspondent Steve Fox and 2020 cameraman Bob Brandon and soundman Phil Lauter are the first network news people to have set foot on the mountain itself since the eruption. Steve and the crew spent 2 days last week with a search and rescue team.
The danger area is from the mountain to just north of Spirit Lake.
Because they don't even know for sure they're in there. If they can get me a vehicle here, I'll put a ground water here.
They plan. They talk. They calculate every risk as they work grueling hours to battle the disaster. Using every means of communication, local officials and active army troops share information, their most valuable weapon in the assault on Mount St. Helens. Deputy Sheriff Mike Copenheffer leads the combined forces on search and rescue missions for possible survivors of the eruption.
If we get a confirmed missing on a vehicle, we're going to get a ground crew in with support with the helicopters. Will we fly them in or drive them in, depending on the weather?
Sheriff Sergeant Randy Hamilton instructs local volunteers in emergency search and rescue. He says the results have been especially rewarding on Mount St. Helens' rugged terrain.
A successful mission is when you find what you're after. And I think the personal pride involved is being able to work with the volunteers. Seeing volunteers come out that you know that work at the bank during the day or work at a mill or run a farm, that when you call them, they come.
They come here to a nearby village firehouse, anxious to help friends, relatives, and neighbors. The volunteers and regular Army helicopter crews drop other responsibilities to concentrate on the rescue effort. Each morning, women from the community prepare donated food for everyone, including Hauser, the German Shepherd tracker who will travel with the rescue team. There are 50 Army troops here and 20 civilian volunteers. The mood is one of cooperation, not competition.
The camaraderie is wonderful. And I think the Army men know that our men know the roads, know the area like the back of their hand. They're taking the risk because they hope maybe they might find someone still alive, hold up somewhere up there. And of course, all the bodies have to be brought out too.
Swarms of quakes followed. Until March 27th.
We are directly over Mount St. Helens right now, and there is no question at all that the volcanic activity has begun. You can see smoke and ash pouring from the top of the mountain, especially on the north side of the mountain.
A concern for public safety prompted the closure of the Gifford-Pinchot National Forest. What scientists had anticipated, the eruption of Mount St. Helens before the end of this century, had begun.
Other option, he begins walking toward his only glimpse of hope, a tiny sliver of light in the ash-blackened sky. He rolls his video camera, capturing what he thinks are his last moments on Earth.
I never really thought I'd believe this or say this, but at this moment, I honest to God believe I'm dead. There's really no way to describe those feelings. I feel the ash now in my eyes. It's getting very hard to breathe. Burns to breathe. And the old talking is burns to breathe. Burns my eyes. Oh, dear God. My God, this is hell.
Like the Kearneys, Crockett made it out alive. but many people were not as lucky. After the initial eruption, scientists discover an alarming bulge on the north side of the mountain. Magma rising within Mount St. Helens has encountered a blockage in the mouth of the volcano and is being forced out around it. Scientists, like volcano hazard specialist Dan Miller, explain the danger to emergency agencies, but little is done.
As the weeks passed and nothing serious happened at Mount St. Helens, it became more and more difficult for us to convince the various agencies, both state, federal, and local, that something ugly was about to happen.
Over the next 2 weeks, the bulge on the north side of Mount St. Helens grows larger every day.
The mountain was moving at such a rapid rate, about 5 feet a day or so horizontally, just day after day after day after day.
Officials finally heed the scientists' warnings and establish a so-called red zone, a safety perimeter that extends from 3 to 8 miles around the summit. They begin evacuating residents. On the banks of Spirit Lake, less than 5 miles from the summit, an 84-year-old resident named Harry R. Truman, no relation to Harry S. Truman, tells reporters he has no plans to leave.
That's my life. Spirit Lake and Mount St. Helens is my life, folks. I've lived there 50 years. It's a part of me. That mountain and that lake is a part of Truman, and I'm a part of it.
Truman's defiant
camps leading to flooding, sweeping away homes.
I'd made up my mind I was going to make it. But the wife and my friend wanted to give up, and I couldn't.
And it wasn't over.
A mushroom cloud of ash and black smoke soared 10 miles above the Cascades. In the cities east of the mountain, the sun was snuffed out as ash fell like snow.
But even as many found rescue, the disaster was far from over.
Dawn on Monday broke like the first day on a strange new planet. Up the Toodle River Valley, the destruction was complete.
40 years ago, they wore masks too, but for a different reason. For much of the state, ash was everywhere.
That ain't bad out here. That ain't good either.
The ash had to be shoveled like snow. It wasn't going to melt.
Part of the house is still standing, and we left with the shirts on our back. I'd like to get back in.
It was as scary as scary gets, because you didn't know what was coming out of the sky. You couldn't see. It was hard to breathe. The kids were crying, saying, "Daddy, are we going to be all right?"
The mud, now stopped, set like wet concrete. President Jimmy Carter came to see for himself.
Somebody said it looked like a moonscape, but the moon looks like a golf course compared to what's up there.
And still the mountain boiled. It would erupt twice again in the next month, showering ash over Portland and Olympia, Washington. But this eruption, this blast, the equal of a 50-megaton bomb, was the most dramatic in at least 500 years.
There are five.
The dangers would be if the volcano becomes active again, there's a pretty good source within the crater itself of a lahar, a mud flow emanating from the crater if there's a significant eruption.
It's happened before. During the 1980 eruption, the mountaintop glaciers dissolved, joining rock and other volcanic debris to form a massive lahar that swept down the Toodle River Valley. This is not a scene residents want to see repeated. At the USGS National Volcanic Laboratory in Vancouver, Washington, seismographs act as an early warning system, gathering real-time earthquake and tremor information from sensors placed on the mountain.
We're always monitoring Mount St. Helens because it is the volcano that's erupted the most frequently in the Cascades.
Hydrologist Steve Schilling says there is reason to take notice of what's happening in the crater.
Now, because it erupted in 1980, it did not remove all hazard. So I can show you as comparison here between 1980 and 2000. And so you can see as I flicker that on and off, the dome grows and the increase within the crater, sort of a horseshoe shape around the dome of the snow and ice and rock that's accumulating. And so that's a fairly quick period of time for this glacier to develop. Eventually what this will do is fill up, and in who knows how many years from now, eventually we'll have another mountain like it looked prior to the 1980 eruption.
...than we first thought. Through massive tree planting efforts, as well as encouraging natural growth in the blast zone, life has come back, and the recovery has been amazing. As early as the late 1800s, local residents would come up for a leisurely drive through the massive old-growth forests, first by horse, then by automobile. They would horseback ride and camp in the hundreds of square miles of this amazing outdoor wilderness. Eventually, summer cabins, lodges, and youth camps dotted the landscape, drawing visitors on a regular basis. During winter, adventurers would hike the mountain, then ski down its almost perfect slope. The more daring would ice hike, then camp at the top for an amazing view. The diehards started clubs for climbing and skiing, all for the enjoyment of spending time at the mountain. Anglers of all ages took advantage of large trout, and there was no better place to cool off than in the glacier-fed waters of Spirit Lake. It was a recreational wonderland.
I remember one particular winter when we hiked into the Y Camp and stayed there for two or three days. It was a beautiful, beautiful area up here.
My wife and I and kids spent days up here in this area. You could drive all day in the Weyerhaeuser Road system and the forestry roads and never see the same thing twice.
Mount St. Helens' beauty was a bit deceiving, for it was a young volcano, lying dormant beneath its pristine glacial peaks.
Most of what the mountain we know today was built in the last 2,500 years. So it's very, very young, very active geologically. It has basically grown up since the last glaciation. So Mount St. Helens was a very smooth and symmetrical cone-shaped volcano, and very much like Mount Fuji in Japan.
This area was prized for its recreation, for its great beauty, and also because it held some of the most valuable commercial timber on the planet. In fact, Weyerhaeuser's biggest parcel was just north of the blast zone. Nobody had a better appreciation for its value than Dick Ford, who is the superintendent of the land for Weyerhaeuser.
Another one of our reporters, Joe Rico, was on the ground along the Toodle River today. Right now, Joe is in Toodle Lake, and he files this report. No, he doesn't file this report. We are not going to have his report right now. But we can tell you that the ash was so thick today that in many places visibility was practically zero. That meant roads had to be closed. Interstate 5 was closed for 8 miles. That's where it crosses the Toodle River, blocking hundreds of cars, trucks, and buses. I believe now it's open only to emergency vehicles. I-90, the major east-west route in Washington State, was closed for more than 40 miles. US 12, which runs east-west around 20 miles north of the mountain, was also closed for about 90 miles. And on the question of Harry Truman, we have been getting a lot of calls about his fate. As you know, he's the 84-year-old man who refused to be evacuated from his home on Spirit Lake. Skamania County Sheriff Bill Closner, contrary to the report Boyd Levitt has, Skamania County Sheriff Bill Closner says he talked with Truman yesterday at his home in Spirit Lake, and he fears that Truman and his 16 cats have probably been swept away by mudslides. There have been continuous flows of extremely hot ash, steam, and pumice flowing straight down, apparently into the Spirit Lake area. About 30 feet of debris, we have a report, has covered the area. If Truman stayed, there is very little chance that he survived. As Ralph said, he did say he planned to hole up in a secret mine shaft with two kegs of whiskey and wait for the worst to pass. We can only hope so. He was the only permanent resident living near the mountain who refused to be evacuated. We now have reports of heavy ash fallout from as far away as Butte, Montana. In northeastern Washington, there was so much ash that it was like night in the middle of the day. We have pictures of Yakima, Washington, for instance, which seem almost unbelievable. There weren't many cars on the street, but those on the street, as you can see, had to use headlights. Ash was falling like rain for several hours, and planes at the Yakima airport were covered with a thick layer of this stuff. Our photographer, Tom Sr., also took some photos, these photos, about noon today in the Trout Lake area of Washington. The plume of ash was clearly visible, but it was getting darker there by the minute.
Sense of authority makes him a folk hero overnight. May 1st, 1980. A month has passed since the first eruption. Without another major event, public excitement dies down. But the ominous bulge on the mountain continues to grow. The U.S. Geological Survey sets up a new observation post, Coldwater 2, 5 miles northeast of the summit. This one is 3 miles closer to the volcano than the existing site at Coldwater 1. At Coldwater 1, Roe Finley, an assistant editor with National Geographic magazine, is interviewing 27-year-old photographer Reed Blackburn when the ground begins to tremble.
I looked to Reed without saying anything, but with concern, and he said, earthquake, I think it's about a 4.5.
The earthquake is just one of many that occur each day on the volcano, but any one of them could trigger an eruption. Blackburn, on assignment with the Vancouver Columbian newspaper, is ready if the mountain erupts. He is positioned where he can trigger two remote control cameras placed 1 mile from the summit. A graduate student manning Coldwater 2 must leave for the weekend. Geologist Don Swanson and his colleague David Johnston agree to take turns filling in for him.
Dave said, okay, I'll do it for Saturday night if you can come up on Sunday and replace me.
May 17th, 1980, 8 a.m. It's been more than a month and a half since the first eruption. Despite the fears of USGS scientists, many of the residents evacuated from the red zone are convinced that the crisis has passed.
Smoke soared 10 miles above the Cascades.
The ash is extremely slick on a roadway, makes it very hazardous condition. Visibility is down to zero.
In the cities east of the mountain, the sun was snuffed out. A terrifying darkness at noon as ash fell like snow.
So too is the life of mountain innkeeper Harry Truman. He spent half his
century at his lodge on Spirit Lake in the shadow of Mount St. Helens, a mountain he loved and protected.
It's an emblem of me that them signs been there 50-some years.
At least 25 people were dead.
Well, I'm not going to take it down.
40 others were missing.
Nobody's going to take me down and take me down and work the motor down that road.
Blast
backwards when I go down that road, or I'm not leaving. And I'm not going to take my name off.
I've made up my mind.
It's sandblasted. I've changed it five times in my life, and it's going to sit there and rot down.
Wanted to give up.
I'd like to see the man that's going to take that sign off that post.
I don't know.
It is Thursday, March 20th, 1980.
Realize
the last people to witness the volcano's power had seen her erupt in 1857. Since then, the mountain has been quiet. Now, an earthquake rumbles deep inside St. Helens. She is awakening after a 123-year slumber. Action steam. There are thousands of small earthquakes. There is no major eruption. There are no fireworks. But the watchers come from across the country and around the world, hoping they will be the ones to see the fury if it comes.
I just want to see volcano at work. I don't think it's going to blow at this point. I think it's just going to sit and simmer.
Overworked and undermanned, the police try to keep sightseers out of the area. They try, too, to keep residents away from an uncertain danger.
I have about $7,000 in snowmobiles at my cabin and at my dome site. Under my own responsibility, I go up and get them.
Hey, we wouldn't be in there 10 minutes.
I know, but that's
all the longer it takes us to go in there is about 10 minutes and get the hell out of here.
At this point, the volcano is still a novelty, a curious smoking reminder of our primitive past. There is no hint of a deadly future.
He's saying, huh?
The volcano is still a novelty.
Own responsibility, and I go up and get him.
Sheriff's order.
Hey, we wouldn't be in there 10 minutes.
I know, but that's
all the longer it takes us to go in there is about 10 minutes and get the hell out of here.
At this point, the volcano is still a novelty. Pack up and leave.
The mountain had a newly opened crater, measuring about 250 feet in diameter. The earthquakes continued. Forest Service and cooperating scientists went right to work.
845.
Ringing the mountain with an array of gadgets, hoping to document even the slightest twinge. The Forest Service ordered immediate evacuation of its own nearby ranger stations, such as this one on Pine Creek on the southeastern flank of the mountain. They also strongly urged others having homes, lodges, or camps near the mountain to do the same. On the morning of March 29th, a second crater was observed, which had opened during the night. The new crater measured 75 feet wide and 30 to 60 feet deep. On March 31st, explosive eruptions continued, and the two craters merged. For the next several days, the mountain continued to spew ash and steam. Then, eruptive activity decreased. However, a bulge noticed earlier on the north-northeast flank of the mountain near Goat Rocks was found to be moving north-northwest at about 5 feet a day. Scientist David Johnston expressed the opinions of the U.S. Geological Survey. They would later prove incredibly accurate.
In the initial phases, we'd see probably very large eruptions that would extend high into the air. This would spread ash over large areas in western Washington, maybe possibly in an extreme case, even farther east. In the near flanks of the volcano, there would be more damage done by possibly hot avalanches, pyroclastic flows. Farther downstream, we could see mud flows and floods.
Because this is such a symmetrical volcano, and because the crater is so high, if there's an explosion, it's probable that the debris, the very hot incandescent ash that would come down all sides. But right now, there's a very great hazard due to the fact that the glacier is breaking up on this side of the volcano, on the north side, and that could produce a very large avalanche hazard.
In the meantime, the chief of the Forest Service declared part of the land around the mountain a geological area to help protect the unique features. The Forest Service and the U.S. Geological Survey were taking the mountains seriously, as did the Spirit Lake Youth Camp operators.